All right, you can see on the screen that we want to talk a little bit tonight about the foreknowledge of God. And that is really somewhat of a difficult subject. There's no question about that. When you start talking about the foreordination of God and the idea of his foreknowledge, predestination, those kind of things, there's difficulties with this particular subject. And most preachers will not be dogmatic with regard to every conclusion about with regard to this subject, and rightfully so. It is a difficult one. But what adds to the difficulty, of course, is the false teaching of Calvinists and others who don't believe that man has a free will. So they have no problem with regard to their false doctrine as it connects to foreknowledge. We sometimes struggle with this to see how it connects with the idea of God's foreknowledge and our free will. Sometimes we struggle with that, and some of that is, I believe, because we come to some assumptions that aren't necessary, that make the subject a little bit harder than it might really be. But let's look at, first of all, the idea that, put this on and it should work, the Calvinistic thinking, understanding on foreknowledge. Now, there are many brethren who would agree with much of what Calvinists teach only to this little small subject of foreknowledge. You notice on the screen it says the Reformed doctrine of predestination. Whenever you see the word Reformed in connection with any teaching or anything, you know the people behind it are very, very Calvinistic. The so-called Reformed Church, whether it's the Reformed Baptist Church or the Reformed Presbyterian Church, the so-called Reformed Church is heavy into Calvinism. And it says the doctrine of predestination represents the purpose of God as absolute and unconditional, independent of the whole finite creation, and as originating solely in the eternal counsel of his will. God is seen as the great and mighty king who has appointed the course of nature and who directs the course of history even down to its minutest details. His decree is eternal, unchangeable, holy, wise, and sovereign. It extends not merely to the course of the physical world, but to every event in human history from the creation to the judgment, and includes all the activities of saints and angels in heaven and of reprobates and demons in hell. So now you stop and think about that. That's pretty deep stuff. And it really is teaching something profound. If you agree with that, it's basically saying that everything that ever happens is decreed by God. Even, he says here, to the minutest details. Everything is eternal, unchangeable. And so you just stop and think about that. Is that true? And there are brethren who believe that that's true. And particularly as it connects to foreknowledge. Because if something is, when God foresees something, you know that thing, whatever he foresees, is going to happen the way he foresees it, because God is God, and he can't foresee something that doesn't happen. And so you have this idea. Here's another smaller quote. Again, you see the Reformed faith. But God has foreknowledge, and that he therefore is able to predict future events, obviously. But if God foreknows any future event, then that event is as fixed and certain as if foreordained. For foreknowledge implies certainty, and certainty implies foreordination. So, again, I mean, you just stop and think about that then. It's certain. Anything that God foresees is certain. Of course, the common doctrine of Calvinist, and again, I wouldn't doubt that majority of brethren would conclude that God foresees everything, because God is God. He's omniscient. And if God foresees something, then, as this source says, then whatever he foresees is certain. But God foresees everything. And so everything is certain and already declared and predetermined. And this is how Calvinists tie this into predestination. Because one of the things they see, they say he has seen, is our salvation. And if I ask the question to you, if I ask the question to brethren, does God know whether or not we are saved? Most brethren would say yes. I want to challenge that a little bit tonight. And I won't be dogmatic about it, but I want to challenge that notion. But most brethren, maybe most of you, would right away answer that question. Does God know whether or not you are already saved, that you're going to be in heaven? Does God know that? Has he foreseen that? And we're almost afraid to say no to that. It almost sounds blasphemous to think no, God maybe doesn't know that. And so because of that, that gives us difficulties with things such as the free will of man. Because if God has foreseen it, even on an individual basis, then whatever he has foreseen cannot be changed, cannot be altered. And Calvinists really play on that. But let me ask you a couple questions. Is it the case? We know God is omniscient. There's many passages that speak of that, and we don't have time to look at all of them. I suspect that the most familiar one is Psalms 139. Flip over there. We'll just get it before us. Most of you are familiar, I think, with Psalms 139. When you get over there, you'll know exactly what it is. Here, Psalms 139, and at verse 1, these words again are very familiar. O Lord, you have searched me and known me. You know when I sit down and when I rise up, you discern my thoughts afar off. You search out my paths and my lying down, are acquainted with all my ways. And he goes on. All of these verses really point to the omniscience of God. Where shall I go, verse 7 says, from your spirit? Or where shall I flee from your presence? If I ascend into heaven, you are there. If I make my bed in Sheol, you are there. If I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, even there your hand shall lead me, and your right hand shall hold me. If I say, surely the darkness shall cover me, and the light about me be night, even the darkness is not dark to you. The night is bright as day, for the darkness is as light with you. And so, you know, just very, very graphic language there, but yes, God is omniscient. And then we have passages like Hebrews 4 at verse 13, that every creature is manifest in his sight, all things are naked and open unto the eyes of him with whom we have to do. And there are other passages that speak of God being omniscient. But here's my question. Does the fact that God is omniscient demand the conclusion that God foresees everything that is ever going to happen? Does omniscience equal that God knows absolutely everything? And I know right away you think, well, yeah, of course, God knows everything. God is God. Well, let me ask you another question. Does the omnipotence of God demand the conclusion that God can do everything? Well, we know the answer to that. I think we talked about it in one of these classes, Sunday or Wednesday, not too long ago. What does the Bible say God cannot do? He cannot lie. Now, I don't care how you approach that. That's Hebrews 6 at verse 18. And that by two immutable things in which it was impossible for God to lie, we might have a strong consolation who has fled for refuge to lay hold upon the hope that is set before us. And I've often said that's a self-imposed restriction that God has placed upon himself. But I don't, however you view that, you know, some say he can't lie. It just, that's contrary to his very nature. Well, fine. That, I don't disagree with that at all. But no matter how you look at it, here's something the Bible says God cannot do. There's another passage that at least it is implied. It may not be as strong as Hebrews 6 at verse 18, But let no man say to you when he is tempted, I am being tempted by God. For God cannot be tempted with evil, and he himself tempts no one. And so again, that's not quite as strong. It doesn't specifically say God can't tempt anyone, but I think that would probably be the conclusion of all of us, and it certainly is implied. Like, is there anyone here that would say God can tempt man with evil? Most would say, just like he can't lie, he can't do that. It would be, again, contrary to his very nature. So the Bible expressly says there are some things God can't do. Of course, this is what the Bible says. Man has come along over the years always, and like atheists and Bible critics, and they're trying to always poke holes and even the existence of God. So they'll come along and say, well, I tell you something God can't do. He can't put two mountains together without there being a valley in between. Well, you know what? God can do that. From a physical standpoint, you stop and think about it. How could he ever do that? If there wasn't a valley between the two mountains, what would that be? One mountain. But the only way that's a problem, and the atheists throw that out because they think if they can poke holes in the idea that God isn't all-powerful, they can come up with something God can't do. Aha, we got you. You Christians, you think God's all-powerful. He can't do this. And therefore, they extrapolate that into the idea that there isn't even a God. Your God isn't all-powerful, like you say. There are things he can't do. And so we just deny the whole existence of God. But that's not really a problem unless you believe that omnipotence equates to the fact that God can do everything. We know biblically that's not true. God can't lie. But is he omnipotent? Of course he is. His power is infinite. He is all powerful. We can't understand even the degree of his power. That does not mean that there's nothing he can't do. Well, if that's true with omnipotence, if that's true with the power of God, why can't the same thing be true with the knowledge of God? If God can be omnipotent and yet there's something he can't do, why can he not be omniscient with there being something he doesn't know? Now, let me say this, that whatever God doesn't know, if you conclude there's something that God doesn't know, it is self-imposed. And here's where I think we need to understand about omnipotence and omniscience. Like being omnipotent means that God has all power. He has the ability to do things. It doesn't necessarily demand that he do it. Like there are some things that God has the power to do, but just because he's omnipotent doesn't mean that he's going to do it. Could God destroy this world just at a blink of an eye? Yeah, sure he could. Doesn't mean he has to. He's not required to do that just because he's omnipotent. And so when you start talking about omnipotence and omniscience, you're really talking about ability, not what is required. God has the ability, when it comes to knowledge, to know everything, but he's not required. He can restrict himself if he wants to. Now, if you say, no, he can't, guess what you've just done? You've limited his power, haven't you? And so, God can, and we know, what do you think about Jesus? Is Jesus God? Anybody here willing to say he's not God? Did he stop being God when he was here on earth? No, he's always been God. He will always be God. You want to talk about something that's impossible. It's impossible for God to stop being God. That's an impossibility. So Jesus has always been God. Is there something we know he doesn't know? Scripturally? The day of judgment. But most Christians would say, yeah, he's God. He never stopped being God. Therefore, he's what? He's omniscient, isn't he? Jesus was omniscient when he was here on earth. He didn't always use that attribute. But sometimes he gave it. Now, there's some brethren who think that he never used that attribute. I would disagree with that. I think there's some evidence of him using that attribute when he was here on earth. There were some things he knew that a mere man couldn't possibly know. But one thing we know he doesn't know is when he's going to come back. Only the Father knows that. That's a self-imposed restriction. So with the Father, God has the ability, the power to know everything. But there may be, and again, you'll have to study this out for yourself and continue to think. I know this is not first principle stuff, but if God restricts his knowledge, it's only in keeping with his overall purpose and will. And if anything's going to interrupt with our free will, then God will purpose not to know. Now, what I want to do is I want to show you some passages that to me, at least, and again, you can go back home and study these things, that I believe implies that there are some things God doesn't know. We already know something Jesus doesn't know, and he is God. So this shouldn't be earth-shaking when it comes down to the Father. Somehow we do make a difference, though, with the Father, don't we? We do think, well, yeah, Jesus, because he took on that role of a man and thing. So, but the Father, boy, he knows everything. Well, turn over to Genesis chapter 5. And here's a passage that I'm quite certain that at some point in time, at least many of you have read. Genesis chapter 6 is what I want. Genesis, the sixth chapter. That you've read this and you have given some thought about this, particularly if you have in your mind that God knows everything, that he's omniscient and he foresees everything. And if that's your position, then this kind of is troubling a little bit. Has to do with the flood, of course. And look at verse 5, Genesis chapter 6 at verse 5. The Lord saw the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every intention of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. And the Lord regretted that he had made man on earth, and it grieved him to his heart. So the Lord said, I will blot out man whom I have created from the face of the land, man and animals and creeping things and birds of the heavens, for I am sorry that I have made them. Doesn't that raise some questions? If God knows foresees everything that ever happens, why would God regret making man if he knew exactly what man was going to be when he created him? Why would he be sorry that he made man? Why would he be so angry that he decided to destroy the world by flood because of the wickedness of man if he had foreseen all of that anyway? Like, does it make sense to you that God knew exactly how man was going to turn out, and so when he saw man and the wickedness of man, he was sorry. I think the King James said he repented of that. And if God saw all of that before he created man, why did he create man in the first place? If he knew, he had foreseen, man was going to turn out wicked and it was going to break his heart, why did he create him in the first place? Those are some interesting questions. Could it be that God restricted himself and he didn't know how that was all going to turn out? That solves a lot of issues with this kind of wording. If you believe that God foresees every little thing, somehow you gotta figure out how it is then that he was grieved over man that he created and knew that he was going to do all of this. So, yeah, go ahead, Dale.
He was sorry that man did what he did and still does today.
Right.
But we're not robots. God, from the beginning, allowed us to have our own free will. We could do what we want to do.
Right, yes.
And then the results are ours. Now we, for punishment or for doing good.
Right.
I was thinking about Jesus. There were things that he didn't know But for example, he knew which one of the apostles that was going to forsake him. He knew.
Right. Yes.
He knew that.
Yes. Yes. That would be an example of his omniscience.
Say, could Judas have not done that? Had not made. Yeah, I don't know the answer to that.
Yes.
I don't know that any of us know the answer. Maybe he couldn't. Maybe he had to do what he did because it was predetermined. I believe that.
And we say this is where Calvinists would come in, and they would say every event, like Cain, they would say there was no way. Cain had to do what he did because God foresaw it. And since God foresaw it, if Cain did anything other than what he did, it would have ruined the foreknowledge of God. Yeah, he had the ability to do that. Yes, he had a free will. We all had a free will. So yes. Yes. Right. Yeah. Yeah. So God. So that points to the idea, and there are other things like that. That points to the idea that you know, in that one quote we had up there, is if no God determines something, that's it. It cannot change. God can change, even though we don't have a lot of evidence of that sort of thing. We know, we've often said, prayer changes the mind of God, and it sure did with Hezekiah. So that wasn't something that was determined by God before the foundation of the world and couldn't change, because God changed it. So. Yes, yes, yeah, yeah. Right, but the question comes down to, and this is where Calvinists get off track, I believe, anyway, that the question comes down to each individual. Like, what I'm asking with regard to salvation, does God know the end conclusion of each one of us as individuals? That's a different story. It's just like I'll get all your hands in just a minute, but it's just like the idea. God did, and we'll look at a passage if we have a chance. God did have foreknowledge. He foreknew something, even with regard to salvation. But the question is, did he foreknow a people or a person? Those are two different things. Where Calvinist believes he foreknew each and every, he foresaw each and every person who was going to be saved, who was going to be lost, and therefore it was predestined, predetermined, and cannot change. It's one of the reasons why they think you can't fall from grace. How can you fall from grace if God foresaw your salvation in the first place, and once he foresees it, it can't change? And so, according to them, see. And, well, what did God foreknow? We don't have to get into a deep discussion about that. But I think clearly God foreknew a people who were going to be saved, who were going to be conformed to the image of his son. God can foreknow that as a people without foreseeing every single person. So, yeah, go ahead. A few hands, Autumn and then Rick. Yeah. Right, yes, yes. There's a lot of things that are a little bit, would become a little bit far. And I don't, again, one of the things we all need to understand is that the mind of God is so infinite that we can't completely understand a subject like this. But whatever conclusion you come to, you don't want it to contradict the free will of man. And that we have the ability to choose. Because that hasn't been overridden by the fact that God has foreseen each and every one of us and every event. And like when you begin to think about that, you can't just go on one side of the issue. Because again, even as Calvinists would say, if God foresaw every person who was saved, what else did he foresee? Everyone who was lost. And if that points to predetermining then everybody who was saved, then it also goes to predetermining everyone who is lost. Is that a part of that decree that the Calvinist was talking about, the minutest detail that cannot change? That's a little harder to swallow. Go ahead, Rick. Yes. Yes. Yeah. Well, yes. I don't. Some of those things are hard to answer. But yes, you know, God knew what he was going to do. But he had the church. My thing, where I divide it, is he had the church in his mind before the foundation of the earth. He knew people were going to be saved. We're going to need saving. And he knew people would be saved, of course, through his son. He had the plan in his mind. But that's different to me. The difference between what I believe on that and the Calvinist is on what that foreknowledge entails. To the Calvinist, it entails the salvation of each and every person that God has foreseen. And maybe this isn't as much of a difference as I'm making it, but to me, I see a people. God knew, for example, that those who would obey the gospel of Christ would be saved, and those who didn't would be lost. God knew that, and so he knew who he was going to call and how he was going to call a group of people, but not necessarily every single person. And so, yeah, go ahead, Matt. Yeah. Right. Yes. Yes. If that was his unchangeable decree, then that there and lot, those are a lot of the kind of passages that we try to use against Calvinists. Like, Jesus did die for everyone, not a few predestined individuals. And it is God's will that everyone is saved. Now, you know, again, does God know that not everyone is going to be saved? Even we know that. But it is his will that everyone be saved. But the way the Calvinists work it out, in fact, I think I've told you before, they admitted this on radio once, that those who are lost on an individual basis are lost because God wants them to be lost. That's a lot harder to swallow for most people, most even denominational people, that God, it's his divine purpose that Don Wright is, if this has been decreed, that Don Wright is lost. And that's what he wanted. That was his unchangeable purpose. And he foresaw that even before I was born or created. That's a little harder to swallow for most people. But that's not the side that Calvinists will talk about, because it's kind of ugly to think about that. I got a bunch of hands. Go ahead, Greg. I want to look at another passage or two. Or go ahead, Rick. Yeah. Right.
So something I can't explain. I mean, it's like, you know, he repented him that he made man. I don't know.
Right. Yes, but it's made easier if you're not bogged down with the fact that God has to know everything. And listen, let me make sure I say this. As a human being, I'm not going to restrict the knowledge of God. It's not up to me to tell you what God knew and what God didn't know. That doesn't mean he hasn't restricted his knowledge. I'm just not, as a human being, unless he tells me in his word, I'm not about to say, well, God didn't know this, or God didn't know that about Saul or Aaron. And if it's not revealed, then we don't know. Just certain things make more sense when you realize that he has restricted his knowledge for his own reason, for his own purpose, he has. And so, but it's not up to me to say. If he says it in his word, that's something else. Like, I'll give you another illustration of that in just a minute. Go ahead, Greg. I think someone over here had a hand up, but I missed you. Yeah, go ahead. Yes. Right.
What's the point in Noah preaching if God's already got it all laid out that just Noah, you ate, that's it.
Right.
About it.
Right.
Why didn't God just say, build the ark, don't worry about those people, they're all dead?
Yes.
Why
I think to a large degree, Calvinism makes evangelism useless. When you stop and think about it. But I give you another example. We don't have to, you're familiar with it, so we don't have to go and read it. But again, in the book of Genesis, what did God, after Abraham was willing to sacrifice Isaac, it's the angel of the Lord. Most of you have heard sermons on the angel of the Lord. I mean, there's no question that the angel of the Lord was divine. I believe it was the Christ before his incarnation. But there's some evidence about that. But it was obviously a part of the Godhead. What did the angel of the Lord say to Abraham? He's about to plunge him with that knife. And what did he say? Huh? Don't harm him. But why? Huh. You mean he didn't know before that? Why is it that, in fact, that Paul or the Hebrew writer, and even in Genesis account, you remember what it says about God? What was God doing to Abraham? He was doing what? Why in the world did he have to test him if he already knew the situation? Now, it's not up to me again where we have problems because we think the omniscience of God means he knows everything. Where God implied very strongly that he didn't know what Abraham was going to do. He had not foreseen exactly with regard to that individual, Abraham, what he would do with this. And so he says, but now I know. He tested him so that he could know. And so now he says, now I know. That just throws the Calvinist off. He just goes wacky over that because he believes that the omniscience of God demands that he knows everything. And I'm not going to fall apart over that. If God wants to restrict his knowledge, he can, because God is God. He can do whatever he wants. See? And so, again, before the bell rings, all of this is only important as it relates to the free will of man. That there's... I'm not tied into the idea that God has foreseen our salvation, therefore it's predetermined and we can't lose it, or someone who is lost can't gain it. No. I don't believe that. And so, yeah, go ahead, Dale.
God can choose whether we have our free will as to whether we're going to be saved or not.
Right.
That's up to us. But when it comes down to prophecy, those prophecies had to be, and they were.
Yes, yes.
And so God did not restrict himself there. Those things that he said is going to happen, he said they're going to happen, and they did happen.
Yes.
And so he knew beforehand, I believe, that God knew what Abraham was going to do. I believe he knew what Judas was going to do. I believe he knew what the Pharaoh was going to do, because these are prophecies that had to be fulfilled. Now, is he going to change persons? He could if he wanted to.
Right, right, right.
But somewhere along the line, those prophecies had to be.
When prophecies involved anything, like I'm trying to think of the commentary. I have them up on the screen, but we won't have time to get it to him. Adam Clark, who's a very conservative commentator, but he's a denominational scholar, so you can't trust him completely. So, but he emphasizes that there's some things that are contingent. There are other things that are just eternal divine principles that God has set forth that will not change. And prophecy would fall into that category. Anything God prophesied, then we know exactly what is going to happen. His word is never going to fail. But then there are other things that are contingent on things, like the salvation of our soul. What is our salvation contingent upon? Right. And those are the things, not eternal principles, not anything that has to do with prophecy, but things that where it can go either way. We can obey or disobey. Where there are areas where God has restricted himself from knowing. And so now, whether you agree with that or not, that was Adam Clark's position. And it does solve a lot of issues with regard to the free will of man. One thing that the Calvinist is right about, again, if God foresees something, that something is certain. The only thing is, does the Bible teach the unlimited foreknowledge of God? And I personally don't believe that it does. But once God foresees something, that thing is done. It's fixed. It cannot change. It's not going to change. Or else, you got to call into question the foreknowledge of God. How could God, who is perfect, see something, foresee something, and then it doesn't happen? That's different than God changing his mind. I mean, it's one thing to change your mind. Like, God can read our hearts and all of that. And so he can change his mind on some things. But when he foresees something as happening, then it's going to happen. I'm sorry, Paul, very quickly.
That's still conjecture, though. I mean, this is so deep. I know what you're saying. It's very deep. But, I was just going to say, God has changed his mind, though.
Right.
As far as what he's going to do.
Yes. Right. Yes. Yeah, but that doesn't have to do with foreknowledge or even God changing his mind. That's a kind of a different issue. We believe God, that prayer can change the mind of God. But it's a whole different question of whether or not he has foreseen every little detail that has happened or that man has ever done, good or evil. Because if he foresees all the good, he foresees all of the evil. And then you start getting into the discussion of whether or not individuals who have committed evil deeds, did they have a choice in that? I believe they did. All right, we'll some other time hit some more of this.